Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
The news isn't any easier to hear in Ukraine this morning. A Russian rocket attack damaged a kindergarten and a school in eastern Ukraine. Fortunately, no casualties reported, at least so far. Let's find out what's happening at the moment. Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Where are you today, Joe?
Bob, I'm still speaking to you from Lviv. It's a sunny afternoon here after a snowy morning. So a little reminder that we're not quite through the winter yet. The heating tents were in operation throughout the city. And there is amid all, and also last night there was a Russian drone strike on Kyiv. No serious damage. And so we continue to see these sort of small attacks throughout the country, but heavy missile and artillery attacks all along the front lines. There's good news today that the Challenger 2 tanks from the United Kingdom have arrived in Ukraine. Ukrainian soldiers were spending the past several months in Dorset in the United Kingdom learning how to use these tanks. It's an amazing piece of weaponry. They're heavily armored, highly mobile, and this is why Ukrainians were asking for these tanks for many months, believing that they could really serve a good purpose in pushing the Russians back. Especially as we look around areas like Bakhmut and Zaporizhia. And because these tanks are British, they come with water heaters, so you can make a cup of tea, you know, while you're plowing into the invading Russians. And I'm sure Ukrainians will be making borscht in these as well, you know, using the dried borscht that my friends are sending from the frontline kitchen here in Lviv. So there is a lot of excitement about these tanks. Probably they've been here, you know, a little bit, you know, probably even maybe for a week. But today it was announced, and the British officials said that Ukrainians were really very good at learning and adapting. And I think it's important to point that out, because even going back to the first month of Russia's full scale invasion, everyone was saying, we can't send this advanced equipment to Ukraine. And in fact, as recently as January, a retired British military official was saying, you know, these Challenger tanks are so complicated. They have night vision and all these complicated technologies. And, you know, the Ukrainians won't be able to handle it. And I think now, you know, after looking after, you know, at 1 year of Ukrainian holding the line against Russia and taking back territory, and look at the way Ukrainians adapt, you know, as we talked about, that they take cheap drones and they make them much more powerful. Ukrainians are very tech savvy. And so I think that argument that somehow Ukrainians are incapable no longer applies. And so when we hear that in the future, whether it's about additional tanks or fighter jets, I think the real question are countries reluctant to send these weapons because they're afraid of what might happen with Ukrainian victory? They're afraid of Moscow's threats. I think that really is the question. It's nothing to do with Ukrainians' inability, because actually they prove themselves quite adept. And they have great, you know, powerful motivation to use this equipment and to use it well.
The spirit of the forces in Ukraine, just unbelievable. I want to share an email from a listener with you today, Joseph. Hi, Bob. Thank you and Joseph for your continued support and reporting of Ukraine. I do have a vested interest in Ukraine, as my wife is from Ukraine and was visiting Kyiv when the invasion started. My concern goes far beyond my personal interest. The greatest tragedy of this stems from signatories failing to live up to the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, where Ukraine surrendered nuclear weapons to Russia with assurances that military force or economic coercion would not be used against Ukraine. The United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia have not lived up to this agreement. No nuclear nation, aspiring nuclear nation, or terrorist organization will ever again surrender nuclear weapons. They will say, look what happened to Ukraine. The world needs to be constantly reminded of this. I'm not aware of this, Joseph, and I know you're quite the student of history and you know about these things. Is this correct?
Absolutely, that's correct, and it's very important to point out. I mean, 1994, you know, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, there was a lot of hope for a new era of peace. And I think now, as we look at this, and I'm looking at Winston Churchill's warnings after the First World War, to be naive in foreign policy is almost always a mistake. So that's the first thing. But yes, United States and others did agree to protect Ukraine's territorial integrity. in return for giving up nuclear weapons, because under the USSR, you know, some of those weapons were stationed in Ukraine. A lot of them were built here. And but in 2014, when Russia invaded and took the Crimean Peninsula and parts of Donbass, nothing really was done. So the problem sort of was back in 2014, and Russia was allowed to grow in confidence. And you could probably see how Russia thought maybe they could get away with this, because they had gotten away with it 9 years ago. And then the other element, you know, in 1991, President George H.W. Bush, who I've met a few times, he gave the famous Chicken Kiev speech, where he was encouraging Ukraine not to step away from, not to get independence from Russia. And so at the high level, I think there was a lot of probably bad thinking at the time about how to deal with Moscow and the Soviet Union. And you look at the countries who were, used to be under the Iron Curtain, who now are flourishing, like the Baltic nations, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and of course also Ukraine and many countries in Central and Eastern Europe. They have found a way to flourish. And so I think here, this goes back to Zelensky's speech in London. Can we have a more confident vision where we can protect ourselves as free people? And as we consider that, I mean, right now, look at the protests in France and Israel. Those protests can happen because they are free countries. And obviously there's tensions and there's problems, but such protests do not happen in Russia, or very rarely. They do not happen in China. Very disturbingly, the Central American nation of Honduras just a few days ago cut ties with Taiwan in order to get ties with China. And in return for that, I'm sure they'll have, you know, many loans from China and some investments. But Honduras was forced to say that they recognize the existence of one China, that the People's Republic of China is the only legitimate government and represents all of China, and that Taiwan is an unalienable part of Chinese territory. And when I saw those words, those words are exactly what Vladimir Putin has been saying about Ukraine. And so I think, you know, again, looking at how the world ignored the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, which, by the way, the father of the current Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken's father, was part of that. He was a government official back then. So the same characters. But to look and say, you know, maybe now we need to stop acting naively when dealing with dictators and nations who do not believe in the idea of freedom.
The rest of this email from one of our listeners is interesting, too. Let me read this. It's from John in Chicago. I have visited Ukraine on three separate occasions and have also visited Lviv, where Joseph often reports from. I can assure you that Ukrainians are freedom-loving people seeking liberty, independence, and democracy, just as Americans are. Since my wife is from Kyiv, Russian is her native language. Never, ever did any Ukrainian, even in Lviv, in Western Ukraine or anywhere, ever discriminate against her because she spoke Russian. A big thanks to you and Joseph for continuing to keep Ukraine in the news and sharing culture and information about Ukraine. I hope to meet Joseph someday in Lviv in a free, independent, and safe Ukraine. Slava Ukraini, glory to Ukraine. Interesting, huh?
Well, heroim slava and budmo. Cheers to that. And indeed, yeah, that's one of Putin's main arguments, that somehow Russian speakers are oppressed here. It's not the case whatsoever. In fact, the reason why people speak Russian is because for centuries, especially in eastern Ukraine, the Ukrainian language was illegal under both Imperial Moscow and the Soviet Union. They did everything they could to restrict the language. And speaking of Lviv, I just saw a video, Bob, of a soldier from Lviv Territorial Defense. And Territorial Defense was kind of like the National Guard. They were just manning checkpoints at the beginning of the war, trying to defend the city. Now he's in Bakhmut, fighting as a frontline soldier. He was saying, you know, sometimes they're worse than the professionals, sometimes they're better. They've all learned so much in this past year. But he said, our brigade was formed in the city of the lion, of the city of Lviv. We are hundreds of kilometers away from home, and we are holding the Russian horde here at Bakhmut, because there's probably no better place to do it than here.
Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. More tomorrow. By the way, Joe, don't think we didn't catch that little reference to President Bush where you said, I have met him a few times. That's why we call Joe the world's most interesting man. Have a great, safe, peaceful day, Joe. Okay, thank you.
Until tomorrow. Thanks. Yep.